CIA, motherfucker.
Wise man say, forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza. Cause you're a freak with a microphone.
I am an FBI agent.
You're listening to the Super Podcast, featuring hosts Super Marcy.
And I think everybody these days can relate to Serial Mom.
And Pete the Terrible Aussie.
But one of my pet peeves in movies, like people sitting down to have dinner and they don't actually finish the dinner.
This podcast contains coarse language.
See, watching this, like, I just want to go and...
Adult themes.
But, like, the whole, this whole movie is just hinges on someone's ass.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Visit supermarcy.com for more information. Now for our feature presentation.
Listen, sister, if I want your opinion, I'll beat it out of you.
By the way, his testicle retrieval operation went quite well.
White Russian. No ice. Hold the vodka. Hold the Kahlua.
Isn't this 4215 pussy way?
Hey everyone, this is B. Jemine, aka The Terrible Aussie, and welcome to episode 172 of the Super Podcast. And with me, as always, is my very awesome co-host and the super of all things Super Marcy. Super Marcy, hello. Marcy, how are you?
Hello, what a lovely introduction. I'm doing really well, thank you, Bede. And how are you doing?
I'm not too bad, thanks, Marcy, not too bad. I'm very excited for today's episode of the show because this is one of our popular interview editions of the show, and we have a very exciting one lined up for our audience today.
Yeah, I'm very excited for this one as we are joined by director and actor for the film Soul's Chapel, and that would be Jake C. Young, who is joining us to discuss the film.
Indeed, and I have talked to Jake before because he has appeared on my other podcast, Bead vs. the Living Dead. So this will be the first time he's appeared on one of our shows together. So I have a good feeling our audience is in for a treat with this one. So we might as well not beat around the bush and head straight into it. So here is our interview with Soul's Chapel star and director, Jake C. Young.
What do they say about this place? What have you heard?
You saw one of them, didn't you? On the way in. The Lady Crow Killer. Dark Witch.
There's something really wrong with this place.
This place isn't safe.
Hey everyone, this is B. Jemine, and with me, of course, is Super Marcy, and we are joined by a very special guest who is an actor and filmmaker, and he has made quite a number of films over the last couple of years that he's either directed or co-directed, including the likes of A Night of the Undead, The Dark Room, and Daylight to Dark, and he's here today to talk to us about his latest film, which is a mixture of Western, steampunk, and horror. And that, of course, is Jake C. Young. Hello, Jake, and welcome to the Super Podcast.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. This is really cool.
Now, I was saying before that, like, obviously, Marcy, Jake and I know each other because Jake has appeared on my other podcast, Bead vs. the Living Dead, because he made a Night of the Living Dead film called Night of the Undead. So it's cool that we get to sit down, Jake, and talk about another project of yours, but on a different podcast that's not zombie related.
Yeah.
Absolutely, man. Well, hey, we still got to keep the vibes going for sure.
Exactly. But I guess to start off with, in terms of your film, Soul's Chapel, now, one of the things I was struck by with this film is Soul's Chapel is actually a real place.
And you stole my question.
Oh, sorry.
I was going to ask about that first.
Well, you go ahead, Marcy. You go ahead.
Oh, well, no. I mean, yeah, my question was literally Soul's Chapel. I didn't realize until the end was a real place. So please tell us about like how that kind of inspired it, like a film to be set the place.
So Soul's Chapel, it's still a real place. You can still go there to this day. The building itself is no longer there. Soul's Chapel was an old Methodist church, and it was around the time of the American Civil War. You had half of your congregation was divided between the Confederacy and the Union. So at that time, they'd all kind of split, and there's legend has it. I mean, there's a lot of local lore. I don't know how much of it is true, but I know it's supposed to be one of the most haunted places in the state of Kentucky. There's a lot of different paranormal investigators and different people who will come out here, and they will look for things like this and do EVPs and recordings and things like that. And it's been my whole life. I've kind of grown up knowing about the legends and kind of knowing about the local lore that surrounds it. I've always heard different things, excuse me, but the legend has it that there was a reverend who is a pretty nasty guy, and he was allegedly a double worshiper. And so like the people started noticing that there were things going missing around the place, like animals and things. And then it led up to like people going missing and things. And they said that there's like strange like sacrifices and all this just really weird, crazy stuff, like pentagrams under the floor of the church and stuff. And ultimately the legend has it that the reverend was conducting all these crazy things, and I believe it was a lynch mob went after him or something, and he ended up hanging himself from the rafters of the church.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so it was pretty crazy. But whether all of that is true, whether it's not, I'm not entirely sure. Now, to this day, there's a lot of people that go out there and say that this is actually a very common occurrence out there, is that there are a lot of people who still claim that they have seen a girl or a woman in a white dress or a white suit. And we've kind of incorporated some of this stuff into the film, but the graveyard is still there. The church was burned down due to, I believe it was arson. They burned the church down, but the groundwork is still there. The foundations of the place is still there, and the graveyard is still there. And you can still go out there to this day. And there was a sister church that was built right down the road called Bradley Chapel. And it was right down the road, and it's pretty identical to the way that Souls looked. And it's still standing, it's still there. But Souls has definitely its own legacy. And with a name like that, Souls Chapel, I mean, that's just bone-chilling to hear that. So yeah, that local lore kind of inspired that. I remember actually, after I kind of come up with the idea for the script and the story, I was talking, and I told my wife, we were coming back from vacation. I said, I think I know what I'm going to call this film. And she said, what? And I said, Soul's Chapel. And what was very ironic was the night before, she was telling me a story about these people that had went there, but she hadn't told me the name of the place And I said that, and she's like, that's really weird, because that story I told you about there, it's where those people had went, and all this crazy, weird, paranormal anomaly stuff had sort of happened to them. And she's like, that's really weird. So it was kind of just one of those things. We just really went off the local lore and just kind of the inspired legends. But yeah, to this day, it's still one of the biggest tourist attractions in the area, and people still go there to this day to do paranormal investigations. So you can find it online. There's a lot about it. And we took some liberties and kind of played around with it a little bit.
I feel like I want to go paranormal investigating. I've never paranormal investigated ever, but I think you've convinced me. So here we go.
Well, I mean, it's a, like, just based hearing on that, Jake, how interesting of a place Soul Chapel is. And like I've done a couple of paranormal investigations in the past. Mm-hmm. So that would definitely be a place I would go to for sure if I was given the opportunity. But where did the idea of wanting to tackle that place, but do it in the style of a steampunk western?
So yeah, that's actually a good one. That's actually a really good question. So I was at this convention. You know, it's been about 2 years ago now. I was at this convention, and surprisingly enough, they had it in an old west town, and it was a horror related convention. when it was like an Old West zombie themed horror thing, which is kind of cool.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's really cool. And of course, they wanted me there as Jake Eastwood, wearing the poncho and the hat and the whole family get up. So I was like, that's pretty cool. So I went there, and as I'm walking around, I'm looking at this place, and I'm like, man, this would be such a cool place to make a film. And I'm like, and I just kind of looked down, I'm like, man, I've already got the get up on. I was like, everybody else is kind of, but like with the horror element to it, like with the zombies and stuff walking around here, I was like, this would make a really cool film. And so I began kind of crafting this idea in my head. And as I began crafting it, I come up with a story, and then I send it over to one of the producers on the film, who's also a good friend of mine, and he helps me write a lot. And we fleshed it out a little bit, and we attached some of the stuff. I was like, we really need to make this kind of something really cool. And we used the local lore for Souls Chapel to kind of incorporate it into there, something that people were kind of familiar with. The steampunk element, as we got looking at it, I was like, I've always wanted to do an actual Western, like a period piece, but I was like, due to some like budgetary constraints, and I just think it's really cool. Steampunk is just a cool genre of things. And so I was like, why not kind of make this a little more modern day? Because originally I think the story was set as a little bit later style Western. It was supposed to take place near the First World War, kind of the end of the modern American Western and stuff. So we kind of decided to do a version of this in a steampunk world. And I said, you know what, why don't we do this? And nobody ever says anything about it. Like throughout the whole film, we never go into detail about how these characters are or where they're at, this portion of the universe. And I've had people ask me like, so is this like post-apocalyptic? Is it an alternate universe? And I'm like, you know what, that's the beauty of it, because we just never say anything about it in this film. It's almost kind of like you feel like I wanted to give it sort of like a Western Mad Max feel. Like it could be existing somewhere, and there's a lot that's went on, but there's not a lot of explanation. And then of course you add the horror element on there. I mean, it just adds a little flavor in there. So it was pretty cool to be able to incorporate like some steampunk elements, like the guns, you know, a little bit of the costuming. And that's been a lot of people's number one thing that has been requested since this film came out, is like, I really want to see the continuation of this steampunk style horror Western. So, I mean, that's definitely caught a lot of buzz. And it was a whole lot of fun to get to do that, because I like steampunk stuff. I mean, I just think it's a really cool thing. And then you go adding some scary stuff in there, and I'd watch that all day long. So,
yeah, it's pretty cool. I think what strikes me is I love Westerns, and that usually catches people off guard that I have such a love for Westerns. But I think what I love is when you get a Western, but it's not a traditional Western such as this, and you've added the steampunk. It almost feels like, I almost describe it as out of time in a way, like you don't really know when or how it's set, but I like that you don't. And it gives it just such a different feel. So I appreciate that we get something that is a Western, but it is quite different, and you play around with that genre. And I did have a point of where I was going with this, I promise. Oh my goodness. Well, firstly, I appreciate that you've given us a Western type film that is different. It's its own thing. But it's also another thing I love with films is when it's kind of set in that one kind of location, and being that you've got this chapel, and again the name is kind of unsettling, Souls Chapel, like what is going on there? Was it sort of always meant to be kind of just set in that one place, or is it like budget kind of forces it to be? But also, while you can tell like there's some budgetary constraints, like it really doesn't affect the film, like it's part of its aesthetic and charm of it. And I think that you kind of managed to do a lot with so little, which again I'm just always very impressed by.
Yeah, so the original script, it was always meant to be in a one location, and that was something I said kind of from the get-go. I said I want to do a one location just because it's easier. All these people are trapped in this church, and they say they're weathering the soul storm, hence as the Souls Chapel. But with some of those budgetary constraints that usually tend to come along, kind of making this that steampunk style and you don't know when the time period is set, it kind of makes things, we kind of played into it a little bit. So like you said, I personally feel that it didn't take away too much from the film. Obviously, there's going to be things that you can't control. But, you know, it was really cool that we were able to kind of still work some of those things in there. And now there's a lot of people ask me, whenever we premiered the film, originally we premiered it at the Black Mountain Film Festival. It was the first time it was ever seen. They had the whole red carpet and everything. The cast and crew showed up. And man, I really enjoyed that. And I really enjoyed getting to see their reactions to it for the very first time. That's one thing, because, I mean, I've seen it. I do a lot of editing and stuff, but seeing their reactions, looking around, it's always a really satisfying feeling to get to see that. But, you know, I had premiered that. There was a guy who stopped me and asked me, and he's like, man, he's like, that just looked really cool. And he said, so where did you get your church to shoot at? And I was like, you know what? That's a good, let me tell you this story. And he's like, oh. And I was like, so when we were scheduled to film this, I've been scouting locations for a little bit. And I went and looked at this one place, and it was this really big, it was just this old barn. It was a venue, and they had a lot of stuff set up, and it looked really nice. It was really cool looking. And we were going to use this place, and it was going to have all the heaters and everything going. And I mean, it was a really cool aesthetic to the place. And mind you, when we filmed this, it was like what you see in the movie, you know, walking around in like 6 feet of snow. I mean, that was actually how it was. It was cold. I mean, it was actually, there was snow all over the place, and it added to the aesthetic of the film.
Definitely.
Yeah. So whenever we done that, we'd had this place picked out. I kid you not, 3 days before shooting, they call me and they say, hey, Jake, I totally forgot, but we accidentally overbooked. We're doing a full remodel on this place the day you're scheduled to start shooting. I'm just like, what? I was like, wait, hang on, what? So I'm like, man, what the hell am I gonna do? You know, I'm like, what do I do with this? And I'm sitting there and I'm like, man. So I called up the producer, Dave, and I said, I don't know what we're gonna do. And he said, I'll tell you what we're gonna do. He said, we're just gonna build one. And I said, what? So I kid you not, everything you see in Souls Chapel, that is that church, we built that in 15 hours inside of my garage.
Oh, no, wow.
Freaking way. That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. 15 hours, and we built that inside of my garage.
Cannot tell. Yeah. That it feels like a proper like location that's not a set or anything. That's so cool.
Yeah. 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 Everything in there was in my garage. And we've done crazy. A full set decor. We put walls up, like even the window you see in the big wooden door. All that's on the inside of a building. Like even when you were to walk out of that door there, I mean, that goes to the other half of my garage. So, I mean, like we literally built the whole thing. And even like the scenes where I'm kind of in that room up against like the barn planks and stuff. We literally took pallets and we stood them up in a bedroom. I mean, that was... That's what we done, yeah. So we built the entire thing in a garage with like a miniature little guest house. It's not even a guest house. It's not a full guest house. It's like a tiny living quarters up above my garage. It was actually an office. So we ended up turning that whole thing into our set, and we shot the whole thing in like 8 days.
That's crazy. I would never have guessed. I guess movie magic? I think I'm like way more impressed knowing that. I'm like, holy crap, that's freaking impressive. That's crazy.
It was a lot. So I was definitely stressed there at the beginning, but you know, we built the whole thing. And a lot of my other films previously, I'd been all on location and had locations and stuff. This one, we're in the middle of winter, and it's also, not only is it coming one of the craziest ice storms, but like one of the worst freak floods in all of history. And the last day that we're shooting, but the big final climax at the very end of the film, the set actually flooded.
So
we're walking around filming in like water up to our ankles. I look over and the camera guys are standing on milk cartons, and I mean on big crates, and you know, everybody's standing on pieces of board, but they're like, you know what, we're gonna finish this. So I really got to give it to the crew and that cast for really seeing that through. I mean, honestly, because I was ready to throw my hands up, but the fact that they those people were so committed to making that work. I mean, that's a true testament of people who have a love for their craft. So I definitely got to brag on them a little bit.
Oh, definitely. I think that's the passion, and that's
for sure.
That's crazy, but that's amazing at the same time. Yeah. I probably would have, I don't know, gone to the hospital and been like, somebody examine my head. I can't do this anymore. And then you've got everyone just filming in some flooded set that you've made. That's insane and amazing and beautiful in a weird way.
definitely. I will say, though, one of the things that kind of what struck me about this film is that you have a really good cast assembled for this film. And I think everyone does such a good job in their roles, including yourself. But also, too, I didn't realize that one of the actors in the film, who I believe definitely must have been a really big get for you, was Brian Bremmer, who was in Pumpkinhead. But Marcy, he played the role of Pino in Silent Night, Deadly Night 5, The Toy Baker.
I mean, that is a favorite of ours. But I really enjoyed, like, of course I enjoyed you, Jake, but the rest of the cast. And because you're the drifter, so you're the outsider, everybody just has, and it's, I got to give credit to everybody, their eyes. Something so unsettling and untrusting in everyone's eyes in the chapel. It just worked so well. And just the contrast between you coming in and then I'm like, I don't trust anybody here. This is a bit sus. Like,
yeah, the whole thing, the vibe really sets off, I feel like, because you walk in and my characters, they don't know what's going on, but all these people, like, there's so much more here. And it was very unsettling. And I gotta say, all those actors done a great job at kind of pulling that off and building that. And I think there's a lot of character development in here that's kind of very subtle, but you don't really realize how much character development's in here. But I feel like by the time the end of the film, each person kind of had their own story. And, you know, you were almost kind of relating to these characters, even the bad ones, you were kind of relating to them.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think that's always an interesting part, is when you sort of relate to characters you probably shouldn't be. And I think that's a good credit to, as you said, like, subtle character development, which I always appreciate. Like, once a film sort of, as you're going through it, and you're like, oh, yeah.
But also, too, I think one of the performances that really struck a chord with me was the character of Jim, played by Joseph McDowell. Like, there was something particular about his performance. Like, as soon as he sort of popped up on screen, like, there was just something compelling about him immediately. And I think, I mean, everyone else is equally as well, but there was something particular about his performance in particular that I was struck by, especially in that one scene where he's talking to you when you're chained up and he's sort of having that monologue about going into a little bit of his past during the war that you were all a part of. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great performances in here. But, yeah, I mean, again, it's just like you disassembled a really solid cast for this film.
Yeah, so Joe McDowell, funny thing about him, this was his first feature project he's ever done. And he had always, well, that's actually how I discovered him, is he's actually a stage actor. And he'd always been in family-friendly plays. So whenever he pulled that out, no one was expecting that. Wow. And I was like, one of the first scenes, his first real scenes that we shot was the scene where he's speaking to his alter ego in that mirror. And when we're standing there watching, I was watching this in real time. It wasn't all cut together. I kid you not. Usually everybody thinks those scenes are cut together. No, he was doing one scene. He would talk to himself and then boom, into character and say the lines back. And I was like, wow, watching that in real time, I was like, if it looks this good watching this here, man, it's going to look great on camera. So I mean, yeah, he definitely, I think he shocked everybody, including himself there. And I've been fortunate enough, I'm working with him again on another project that I just finished up with him. And he's a really good actor, portrays a very strong on-screen presence. Definitely definitely I wasn't expecting that when I first seen it, and I was like, wow. So I'd seen him in like on the stage, and I watched him on the stage, and I was like, yeah, this guy would be perfect. But I wasn't expecting that, and he definitely pulled a rabbit out of a hat there. I wasn't expecting.
That's pretty cool. And it's cool that you're working with him again. And hopefully we'll get to chat to you about your future stuff as well.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, obviously, because Brian Bremner has been in a lot of films, especially in the genre films. Mm-hmm. And knowing that Joseph McDowell was on the stage, were any of the other actors in the film also from had a theater background? Because I could... With now sort of thinking about it, it's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, I could definitely see you like Joseph McDowell, particularly, like, oh, yeah. This is an actor who was a stage actor.
Yeah.
So Jeremy Boggs has been in several. I've worked with him in several films. And Audrey Kurtzinger, who plays Agatha, she was actually in Daylight to Dark. And that's actually how we met. Mm-hmm. She was cast in a role in Daylight to Dark. She was one of the vampires. And I actually, in Daylight to Dark, I give her the old boom to the head, and she's a vampire, like, and then died. But she came back for this role, and she's a very solid actress. I really got to brag on her. And this was the first time I kind of worked with some new crew members as well, even as far as camera work and stuff. And everything just sort of fell into place. And I really feel that everybody kind of really felt a good role in this.
Mm. And also too, having seen your other work and also this one, one of the things I'm always struck by whenever I see you behind the camera as a filmmaker is even if you do have sort of working with a very micro budget, when it comes to the look of the film, you always find a way how to still make it a very atmospheric film. And this film in particular is full of atmosphere and also just definitely. A lot of beautiful shots throughout
it's the entirety visually, of it looks really great. And I actually really loved the sound and the music. A lot of certain sounds just always get me, and really interesting visuals. So I think the whole presentation is just like, this is so cool. Like a small budget that you manage to, like, that's not even a factor when you're watching it. Like it's, doesn't occur. It's like, this just looks and sounds really great.
Yeah. And aesthetically, I think this film, working with some new crew members, I think this one is probably one of the most pleasing visual films that I've put out in my own personal opinion, in my own career. Mm. Yeah, this one, I was very pleased with the way that it turned out, with its look, with its overall, its color grading, the quality, and some of the shots that were housed in it. I was very pleased with how it came out, and I definitely have to hand a lot of that to the crew members, because honestly, if it wasn't for having good directors of photography or good ADs and stuff, I mean, man, I'm just a dude behind a camera. I mean, I'm just a monkey on a machine. But I definitely got to hand the props to those guys. But I think that's a really good thing. As a director, I feel like really kind of knowing what you want to see and having that vision in your head, I feel like that's something that every director sort of battles with on how they're going to execute that. But as a director, I really am glad that I've worked with people that I can trust, and I can depend on them to get that perfect shot and, you know, bring that vision I had in my head, bring it to life.
Mm. And also, too, not to, because we won't spoil what happens in the film since it's just been released.
Trying to be
released.
Very careful not to do spoilers.
Yeah.
But with your character of the Drifter, would you ever consider, like, doing another film centered around that character? Because I feel like with the Drifter, there's definitely potential of maybe doing, not necessarily a sequel, but again, doing the sort of the whole man with no name type of scenario, or Mad Max type of scenario, where you can easily put this character in a separate situation.
I mean,
because
also, it would give you a chance to have that luscious long hair.
Oh, man, listen. That hair, oh, man. That thing was so itchy. That thing on my head. It was different for sure. But B, to answer your question, that question has come up more often than not in the last in the last few weeks, that's actually been a very frequently asked question to me by other reviewers and people. For instance, Bloody Disgusting actually wrote an article on the film and kind of gave it a review, and the guy wrote it to me. I was messaging him, thanking him, and he said, I hope you bring this character back, and I hope we get to explore that Western steampunk genre. He's like, because it's almost like a horrors fan, man with no name. And I was like, that question's been brought up a lot. So I will say this, there's a very good chance that that genre will be definitely revisited. I'm not going to say that there will be like a sequel or something like that, but there's a very good chance that will be revisited and more steampunk elements incorporated into what comes later on.
That would be cool. That would be cool. I think at least like with this, I think everything's kind of a really interesting mashup of things. And again, as I said earlier, like doing something quite different with a Western always really appeals to me because I love the genre so much. So I definitely hope so. And maybe you'd consider Australia for a location if possible.
Yes.
Put us in a movie and...
If the budget is right and I can make it and I got people that are like, hey, come down here and stay at my house and shoot, Australia is definitely in consideration. I definitely, Australia has some beautiful landscapes, man. And something that I've always seen films that are filmed there, and I'm so envious of those. You guys have like the red rock deserts and things out through there. And I man, it's just so beautiful. I mean, the landscapes there are amazing. So yeah, definitely. I would love to shoot a film in Australia if that ever were to come up. I would be all over that. It wouldn't even be a question.
Well, at least you know some people here, so
I know a few people. So the chances, I mean, if you keep saying things like that, the chances are greatly increasing.
Well, you know, I gotta shoot the shot and tell everyone exactly. You're gonna come and film in Australia.
Well, that's what I think, Jake, is in terms of, because obviously you're using spaghetti westerns as a influence on this film, and I guess this is kind of a fun fact in Australia. We do make our own westerns here, but we call them meat and pie westerns because it's basically like, for it to explain why it's called a meat pie western is, the meat pie, like the small little meat pie, is like a delicacy in Australia, and it is, people eat it all the time at sporting events and all that. And essentially, that's what we call them here. I mean, I only discovered that is what the name of Australian westerns are called a couple of years ago. So, yeah, I would imagine if you did that, I can only imagine what the potential of a Drifter sequel would be if you set it in Australia.
So I'm definitely, you piqued my interest. I've never even heard of that. I mean, I thought I knew everything there was to know about film and westerns and stuff, but I clearly don't. So now you've given me a whole new research project. So thank you for that, B. You like people are gonna watch this and be like, oh, I know what's happening now. No, so there's something in the works. I'm not gonna say that there's a sequel coming, but definitely some of the same stuff. I feel that it deserves to kind of be explored, which I've said this about films before in the past, but none of them have ever received such, a great welcoming like this one has with this type of new mashup in the genre.
Well, I guess also too, because I we're probably getting close to wrapping up our interview with you, but I guess one of our last questions, and of course, Marcy, if you got one as well, one of the things I wanted to ask is, of course, you got some new projects coming up, and I would love to hear what you have in store for us.
But you're also able to discuss it, yes. Which was going to be what I was going to ask anyway. So,
but I think in terms of like looking at your previous work, because you've done zombie films with Night of the Undead, you've done psychological horror with The Dark Room, you've done vampiric comedy with Daylight to Dark, and now a steampunk western. Is there any, I mean, depending on what your next projects are going to be, what would be another subgenre of horror you would love to tackle next as one of your next directorial efforts?
Well, that's a really good question. I've kind of been feeling a little bit of if I had my rathers, I would definitely like to do some kind of a sci-fi based horror. I've always kind of enjoyed those things. I've seen like cosmic things, but my number one thing that I've always done is I try to take genres of things that I really like or things that everybody grew up with, and I try to incorporate those suspense and horror elements into them, which is something I learned. You can have a film pretty much about any genre, but when you start incorporating those little elements in there, you can pretty much take anything and turn it into a horror film. And that's the genre that I seem to specialize in. And most of my horror isn't like traditional slasher, blood, guts, things like that. I feel like it's horror with a story, because now I believe that a lot of films are more, it's more focused on the gore. And honestly, sometimes it can just be kind of gross. And honestly, it's kind of, to me, when I see a horror film that keeps you on the edge of your seat and pulls you in without actually showing so much of the red stuff, I mean, it's actually, it's very intriguing, because you're mastering a craft with a story. John Carpenter, I felt like, done a really good job of that with his original 78 Halloween film. There's really not a lot of blood and guts in that, but the sheer fear that you felt, or that I felt when I was a kid watching that, I was like, oh no, like this is scary. And honestly, it was just, it's all about crafting those skills. I learned a lot of things from like Alfred Hitchcock and people like that. A lot of classic masters of suspense is what I used to call them. But as far as new projects, I am working on a film. I'm getting ready to wrap it up. It's going to be a really cool endeavor. It's more of one of those psychological styled thrillers with a few different elements to it. The only way I've been able to describe it so far is it is a cross between what I would describe as like The Shining meet Stranger Things.
Ooh.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. The title of the film is called Heart Frozen.
That's like,
I just seen everybody go, whoop.
I'm like, oh, man. Just yeah.
I think this one will be one that, without saying too much, I think this one will potentially, it might knock everything I've done in the past kind of out of the water. The characters are very strong in it. I'm very minimal in it. Of course, I do play a role as I do enjoy acting and directing, but we've got a very strong female lead in this film. So it's going to be a more of a female-led film. Okay. So I think this is going to be very interesting in the way that this portrays. And so if you're a fan of those two things, like Stranger Things and The Shining, I think you'll really enjoy this film. And I love Stanley Kubrick's original film, The Shining. I like it better than I do probably any of the other interpretations of it. And I remember watching Dr. Sleep when it came out. Mike Flanagan was a big inspiration of mine, and I've been begging him forever to try to let me audition for his new Dark Tower series. So I've been like begging him forever to let me audition. Whether that'll ever happen, I don't know. But we've got a bunch of mutual acquaintances and people that I've spoken to. But I definitely took some inspirations from things like that to incorporate into this new project that's coming along. And I think the people who see this one, this might be one that definitely does it for a lot of people that are enthusiasts like that.
That sounds really interesting, and hopefully you can come back and talk to us about it.
Absolutely.
I feel like that's going to be something right up my alley, much like Soul's Chapel is, because again, it just gives me things that I really find interesting and enjoy something very different with genres that we know really well.
This one's definitely got a few hidden twists coming up in it. Just stuff that you're really not going to be expecting, and it's definitely an in-depth investigative thriller and horror elemented film. So it's got a lot of cool stuff to it. But yeah, definitely, I'd love to come back on the show. I enjoy doing this. So as long as you guys will have me anytime, you just let me know.
Absolutely, it's such a pleasure to speak to you, and obviously, because like we have a lot in common. We love the horror, but just adding different things with horror, which I always find interesting. It's not just, let's just have a whole bunch of gore and call it horror, which so many people just seem to think that's what horror is. And there's like, no, there's psychological horror. There's all different horror. You don't even need blood guts to have a horror film.
Oh, yeah,
exactly.
So listen, most people's lives waking up going to work, that's a horror film. Exactly. Listen, so you can turn anything into a horror movie if you have the right elements, for sure.
Yeah, the 9-to-5 grind.
Oh no,
is
the bills are
movie.
Due, the house payments due. Oh no, I mean, that's, you can have a lot going on there.
Exactly. I say the Definitely. 9 to 5 is the horror movie. The horror movie is the escape
right there.
From that.
You're out there. You're absolutely right there. Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. But thank you so much, Jake, for sitting down with us to talk about Soul's Chapel. We're very appreciative of it. But before we wrap up our interview today, where can people find you on the internet this week? But also, if they do want to check out Soul's Chapel, where can they look for the movie to watch it themselves?
So if you want to find Soul's Chapel and you want to take a view at it, I will tell you this. I really enjoy hearing reviews and hearing feedback from people. Whether you liked it, whether you didn't like it, if you're going to leave a bad review, go do that on one of the less popular platforms. But I do really enjoy hearing people's feedback. I really enjoy people leaving reviews who have watched the film or want to see more or just overall thoughts. So if you watch the film, leave a review. But you can watch the film as of today.
Your first Letterboxd review is me.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Sweet. Yes. Letterboxd, IMDb. And by the way, Soul's Chapel, so far we've gotten a 7 out of 10 on Rotten Tomatoes on our percentage score. So that's always a good, keep it going. But definitely, if you want to leave a review, definitely do it. But if you want to check out the film, as of today, you can check it out. It's free with ads on Amazon Prime, Zumo. I think you can watch it on Pluto. It's coming free on Tubi in the next few coming days. We're just waiting for it to go live. You can search it on Google Play, any of the major streaming sites. It should be on. I believe we're on Vudu by Fandango, and then of course there is physical media at most major retailers like Walmart, Barnes & Noble, places like that. So pretty much anywhere you would get your films, you can Google or use your search engine to type in Soul's Chapel and look up about the film, where you can watch it, if you want to get a physical copy. Hey, if you want to get a physical copy and you want to come by and see me at any of the conventions I'm at or anything, I love meeting new people and I love hearing what people think about stuff. So if you get a copy, bring it by and I'd love to sign it and talk to you about it and see what you thought about the film. Those are always so much fun. I enjoy meeting new people. But yeah, definitely check out the film and just let us know what you think about it, because we put a lot of hard work into this and we do it to entertain people, and that's what we do it for. So yeah, those are all the places that's available. And while you're at it, maybe go on there and look at the real Soul's Chapel. Look up a little bit of info on it and see if you come across anything, and maybe you can incorporate a few. Yeah, maybe you can check some of the elements that we incorporated. I believe if you go on my socials and my YouTube and everything like that, and just stuff from MTS Pictures, which is our production company, we actually done a little special on that. Also speaking about, speaking with a paranormal investigator about the real Soul's Chapel and the occurrences
there.
Check
that out now. I'll make sure to be up to date on the socials. I think I added it on Instagram or something.
Definitely.
Oh, what was I going to say? Oh, if it's coming to Tubi, we are Tubi enthusiasts because we've been running a Tubi podcast for, 6 years almost?
Yes.
So definitely encourage people to look it up on Tubi because we love Tubi, and you watch the ads and let people get paid for the ad revenue.
Ad revenue. That's how we make our bread to keep making movies.
Exactly. So I'll be sure to watch it again on Tubi and give you the ad money.
Yes.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Listen. I appreciate everyone just watching it and genuinely letting me know what you think about it, because it means a lot whenever people finally get to see a project that you've worked so hard on, and especially to hear good things about it. It makes you. It's a real accomplishment. It makes you feel pretty good.
Well, if it helps, my review is very positive. I don't really like to go into any negatives if I have, because I don't believe that's really productive for anybody. So,
I'll take what I can get.
And I truly believe in championing independent films, and
absolutely,
no matter the quality, like it's art, it's important. It's who we are. And
indie films are taking over.
Yeah, it means a lot to me personally to be able to have a chance to see a film like this and to be able to speak to you about it. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, there you go, everyone. That was our interview with Jake C. Young, the star and director of Soul's Chapel. And thank you, Jake, once again for coming on the podcast and talking about your film.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I'm so happy that Jake had the time to join us to discuss the film. So very thankful for that. And I hope everybody enjoyed it.
Definitely, definitely. But before we wrap up the show today, Marcy, where can people find us on the internet this week?
If people want to find us, we are at supermarcy.com, and you can show your support over at the Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. And of course, you can find the Super Podcast on all your podcast streaming platforms, and that is the mega feed for all of our shows on the Super Network, including this one, the Super Podcast. And I am Super Marcy on all social medias, and Super_Marcy on Letterboxd.
Awesome. And if people were to find me personally out there on the internet, you can follow me on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Letterboxd under Bede Jermaine. You can also find all my work over at supermarcy.com. And you can follow my solo podcast, Bede vs. the Living Dead, on all podcast streamers everywhere. So, yep, that is a wrap for this week's episode of the Super Podcast, and we'll see you all next time, everybody. See ya. Bye.
Bye.
It's coming, and you're all going to die.